of Context, Caroline Casey. So here we are on this anniversary of the Gettysburg Address as Mercury emerges from its retrograde shadow with backup that we proclaim that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. And then we adopted, of course, that government of flora fauna, by flora fauna, for flora fauna, shall not perish from the earth. This hour we'll be playing Kim Stanley Robinson's 2015 Bioneers only 20-minute talk as highly resonant. But first, let's lay out our participatory astro-mythology choreography of now. And we say everything is participatory. Animism is not a belief, it's a practice. Astrology, not a belief, but a practice. Democracy, not a belief, but a practice. So what is behind us? So last week, we had the Jupiter-Pluto conjunction that Pat Ewing and I presided over, invoking, which is just the opportunity to direct collective attention at what is really important, mutual aid and ingenuity and indigenuity guiding us. Excellent segue from last the show previous to Anne McCaffrey talking about engaging our psychic powers. That's great because Kim Stanley Robinson, also science fiction writer, but you'll see, you'll hear, highly resonant. So then we had Friday the 13th, when Mars stationed and went direct, proffering available energy to animate the desirable, that we turn fear and complaint into magnetizing invitation fueled by animated desire. Then we had the new moon at Saturday, Sunday, the 14th, 15th at 23 plus Scorpio, which is a person delivering a Sermon on a Mount. So we have Phoenix's song, Sermon on a Mount. That was Terence McKenna's birthday, which was also November 16th, which was the when Albert Hoffman discovered LSD. It was parked for 5 years until the bicycle ride in April of 1943. But we like that too. It's an intriguing chart, November 16th, 1938, the discovery of LSD. Neptune is at 22 Virgo, which is where it was when this country was founded. So we go, it could be soul medicine. And again, microdosing, even to the point of just words are kind of microdose. So let's journey together. and the journey. And then November 18th, just as a somber reminder, November 18th, 1978 was Jonestown, right, that we want to compost despotism. And then today, I've been so looking forward to today. Let me explain. So many people noted that this year Mercury would be stationing direct on election day, just like it did on the election of 2000, but we're better prepared. Yes, we are. There we go. So on October 13th, Mercury stationed at 11 plus Scorpio, the Renaissance Council, and then it retrograded, and then stationed on election day, and then goes forward, and emerged from its shadow, meaning it returned to where it was when it began this cycle. Today, at 12:49 p.m. Pacific time, there we go, it's close enough for our chart right now, we go, ha. So I've loved November 19th, this chart, going, this is where we invoke democracy. This is where the farcical danger gets composted. This is where we are aspiring to compost the template of despotism, that it no longer be a part of humanity's repertoire. Yes, it's a big thing, but trickster is with us. There we go. So November 19th, this date, is the Gettysburg Address, right? Government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. And we put in flora fauna. And it is Joe Biden's solar return. Hey, magic is a willingness to cooperate with everything. Yes, oh, fellow progressive team, we know the befoiblements and we want to be aware of the befoiblements and all of that. And let it not obscure our willingness to work with the good as well. So this is a magic council. Us, Mercury's at the Renaissance Council, so I have my Monday Trickster Council, my Tuesday Election Magic Council, and radio. Here we are. Oh, and everybody we need is here to do this magic calling in and seeing the desirable. There we go. And then we will play with the itinerary. You know, we have Thanksgiving, of course, which is not just a Hallmark card of colonial Holocaust. You know, it is timed astrologically, quirkily. It's always the first Thursday, Thursday, sacred to Jupiter, after the sun enters Sagittarius, Jupiter's sign. So Jupiter is the intelligence of gratitude, right? And the turkey is a Native American symbol of generosity. So it's not just that we can be aware of the and also see and animate the desirable. That's what we're up to. December 7th just is the last day for Georgia residents to register to vote if one is going to be 18 on January 5th. And there's so much great organizing that we will reference Stacey Abrams and all the black women of Georgia who are organizing the churches and organizing the youth vote. And it's powerful, beautiful. All right, so December 14th is the Electoral College convening on an eclipse, of course, because it's 2020, but it's here for us to work with. What would we like to be eclipsed by? What? Maybe it's the last convening of the Electoral College. That would be good. But may, against all odds, you know, again, truth sally forth. There we go. And that is all because we're in the dark of the year, diving for the winter solstice, and then the winter solstice. You know, so that all creepitudinous thuggery be swooshed from the White House. I think December 21st, you know, either literally or energetically or both, you know, that creepitudinous thuggery is swooshed out of the White House. Let's animate that together. That would be really splendid. You know, and then January 5th, of course, is the John Ossoff and Raphael Warnock Against All Odds victory. May it be so. And then on to our palindromic inauguration, 1-21-2021. 1-21-2021. That's pretty cool. So, right. So, do take notes, because this is such a wonderful talk we're about to hear from our ally, Kim Stanley Robinson. He presented it at Bioneers Conference in 2015, but it's very nutrient-rich, and you'll feel how resonant and pertinent it is to us now. So here we go.
The sustainable and just civilization that we all hope to create, and it's really why we're here this morning, cannot be built using a capitalist economy. Now, it's good news and bad news. It's a little terrifying because capitalism is not just the law of the land, but the global order. And we're in it. It's the rule of law. It's massively entrenched and backed by laws and army. So if you agree with what I've said, then it's right to be a little terrified. The economics, as a study of the capitalist system, which is mainly what it is very proud of its cumulative equilibrium, which is basically the grand total of all the supply and demand questions being made in the market and decided by the market. But it's a deal between buyers and sellers in which everything is always underpriced. The buyers are in a bind because they need to compete with all the other, they need to get what they need. The sellers are in a bind because they are competing with all the other sellers. And so they price things as low as they can so that they don't go out of business. And in fact, they price things for lower than they cost to make. Now, this looks like a recipe for bankruptcy, and many businesses do go bankrupt. But they get away with it by ignoring some of the costs that they've incurred and by shoving other costs onto the future. So because labor, which really means people, can also be bought at the cheapest amount available in the world market, the result is that sellers are selling things for less than it costs to make, buyers are buying them for less than they cost to make, and in a sense, there's a collusion between buyers and sellers to say, look, let's just do this, and the hidden costs, the deferred costs, the denied costs, the externalities will be shoved onto future generations. So normally what that would be called is a Ponzi scheme, and it's a It's a little bit funny to think that the world economy would be illegal if it was run this year in the state of California. But it's not that funny because we're in it and it's the law everywhere. So we are stealing from the future by way of a multi-generational Ponzi scheme. And every year we overuse the natural resources of the planet in terms of what they can replenish at about August of every year. So we're in the overshoot of this year already by a good month or two. And that, as that goes on, the whole biosphere gets degraded, and yet there is no cost by that. So the people who are fooled by a Ponzi scheme do not get their money back. And the people who are fooled by this Ponzi scheme, who are not even born yet, some of them, are not going to get their planet back. So this is serious because it's not just a loss of your finances, it's a loss of your bioinfrastructure. And I just want to very quickly rehearse one aspect of it. The planetary collapse, the sort of Bernie Madoff moment, where if everybody on the planet were to live at Western levels of consumption, you would need two or three planets to support it. So we're in a crash. Is taking the form of a mass extinction event. There's violent climate change, and there's also ocean acidification, which could kill the life in the oceans. And then it's quite possible that sea level could rise very rapidly. The last time we were in these climactic conditions in the Eocene, sea level rose like 15 feet in a single century, and it isn't quite clear why that happened, but it's pretty obvious that it's the ice masses in Antarctica and Greenland that caused it. So what we can quickly wrap up, and I want to actually put it in numbers, is we can burn about 500 more gigatons of carbon before we have, in essence, cooked the planet and tipped it over into a degraded world that will be very difficult for human communities to live in. And yet, we have already located and identified 2,500 gigatons of fossil carbon that's in the ground of the world. Now, companies have listed all 2,500 gigatons of that carbon as assets, and nations have listed them as national resources, offshore or onshore. So there will be corporate leaders and political leaders that will be trying to burn that carbon that they own before the unburned carbon becomes what they would call in economic terms stranded assets. And the monetary value of the 2,000 gigatons of carbon that you can't burn, I recently calculated to be, at current prices, about $160 trillion. Now, this is a completely artificial number because it's like trying to calculate the monetary value of a poison. I mean, you do have to pay money to buy a poison if you need it. But as the poison is administered to the patient and it begins to die, naturally the monetary value of the substance will change over time. But $160 trillion is a lot of money. And there are going to be people, well-meaning people, who out of fiduciary responsibility or out of a feeling of responsibility to their constituents as politicians, that are going to be trying to burn their trillion or two of that carbon and then hope that other people can cope with the problems that are created later on in the process. So there are going to be well-meaning people trying to burn all that carbon for the entirety of this century. And so what it implies is there's going to be an absolutely huge political battle. Now, having described this rather terrifying situation, I think it's very important to point out right now that actually we are also in the position to have the technical capacity, we have the technical capacity, we have the social skills and the knowledge to create a sustainable and just civilization for all 7 billion people on the planet and all the rest of the biosphere's living creatures, including the large mammals that are most endangered. It's not fantasy to say so. It's really kind of a extrapolation of already existing things that we know. So that being the case, the technology really is not the hard part. It's already invented, but we have to pay ourselves to install it fast. So again, that's an economic question, and it doesn't work in capitalism. We can arrange also for everybody alive today to have food, water, shelter, clothing, education, and healthcare. Adequacy itself, which is a very great thing, because one of the oldest phrases in the English language, enough is as good as a feast, is a very true phrase. And in fact, enough is even better than a feast, because feasting makes you sick. So we can fit adequacy within the biosphere's carrying capacity, no problem. And even within the capitalist system, the UN has done an incredible job with its millennial project in raising the poorest people on the planet that are most immiserated. About a billion of them have gotten to at least the next step up in the last 10 or 15 years. But this was not a capitalist accomplishment. This was aid. This was, in effect, charity. It was using the surplus and doing work that is not paid for in the usual profit system. But what's interesting is that's proof of concept that it could be done. So, again, it's an economic problem, it's a political problem. And lastly, people often say, well, there's too many people on the planet, and this is an open question, we don't really know, but one thing's for sure, wherever women have their full set of legal rights, the population growth rate immediately stabilizes, flattens, and sometimes even drops down. So, it's tremendous that social justice is also environmentally and survival terms, useful. It's not a bad thing that you have to talk about usefulness to support an obvious moral point. The two of them strengthen each other and strand together so that you can talk about hyperconsumption and deep poverty as being the worst environmental impacts, and therefore we need to solve inequality, not just because it's the right thing to do, but also because it's the survivable thing to do. That's something to celebrate rather than to worry about. Next spring, E.O. Wilson will publish a book in which he suggests that we occupy only half of the Earth's surface. It's called Half Earth. It's going to be an interesting thing because rapid urbanization is already collecting people into rather tight knots around the planet. The process has already begun. If half of the land surface of the Earth was given back to wilderness, or it's best maybe to call it parks or at least unoccupied or non-human spaces, habitat corridors could be built and the rest of the mammals and the rest of the living things on the planet could prosper in that. Nothing is final but extinction. And it, life is robust, and if we were to create this system in an orderly fashion as quick as we can, it's again part of the solution. The wild creatures, if they have prosperity, that's our prosperity. So this plan of Wilson's could make a sustainable world for all the living creatures. And in short, this is a utopian vision. And I'm very happy to think of E.O. Wilson becoming a utopian science fiction writer. He's often kind of dismissed science fiction before in his writings as the thing that isn't real. But now he's doing it himself. And I'm happy to welcome him. It's a very good crowd that he's joining. So you can describe a utopian situation that is realistic given our technology, our social skills, and the physical resources of the whole biological community of Earth. But we're also in this situation right now. And it's a very peculiar moment in history because the disastrous future, the dystopia, is quite possible, and we're in many ways on course to it. If we continue to do what we're doing now, we're headed that way. On the other hand, the possibility for utopia is also there. We are powerful thinkers on this planet, and we can think our way out of this one by using the technology that's called language, rule of law, and justice. These are technologies. These are the technical solution. Because a technology is a software as well as a hardware. It isn't just machinery. It's really the way that we organize our relationship to the physical world. That's technology. We've been technological since before we were even human. Pre-humans were using stones and fire to get along in this world, and probably clothing. So there's no problem with technology as long as it's understood right as a force for good. But I've often thought that you get a vision of a distant utopia, and you see the situation that we're in now, and the question becomes, what do you do right now to bridge? What is the steps that you take in the present that get you to this positive future that you can imagine rather easily? And so you also have to keep in mind that the solution is going to take decades. It's going to take generations, and you can't let that discourage you. You take the steps that are necessary now. It's a scaffolding theory, like a coral reef. You build the scaffold at the level that you can in the situation that you're faced with, and then hope that that raises the level of discourse and activity so that the next generation action can take over at a somewhat higher level of interaction with the planet. So it's not going to happen immediately, but what do we do right now? So first, anti-austerity. Austerity is exactly wrong and is merely increasing the power of the oligarchy on this planet to continue their destructive ways. So it's not a good plan. And what is anti-austerity actively opposing it is actually supporting government in its representation of the people rather than of the oligarchs. So government is a tool, but it's also a battleground where we're fighting over these ideas. But the Keynesian idea that government imposes on business, imposes its will by way of laws on business, is one that was abandoned for about 30 years of the 1980 till 2008. But ever since 2008, it has been shown that that plan of privatizing everything is actually a road to disaster. And now the first step is just Keynesianism as over austerity. What that means, in effect, in details, is a carbon tax, of course, that rises over time on a regular rate. It's obvious and necessary. Secondly, there should be a high-frequency trading tax so that every time there's a million trades per second, if a mill of that or a point of that is going into the public coffers, then even though there is a basic stupidity to finance, at least it would be funding the public good. A living wage for all could be made out of that kind of coffers being bulked up, and a living wage for all reduces the impact on the planet and creates sustainability and well-being. So this is another obvious idea. And then lastly, and I think very powerfully, Thomas Piketty, his book of a couple years ago, suggests that not only should be progressive taxation, as in the New Deal and the post-war period, not just on income, but on capital assets. Because income can be shuffled under the rug and hidden. But capital assets cannot be hidden. And a progressive tax, sharply progressive, on capital assets would be one of the greatest horizontalizations of wealth and for the public good since FDR's GI Bill. And it might be even more transformative than that, because what all these things together are leading to is, in effect, a kind of social democracy, a version of social democracy, like we see in Scandinavia, but even more so. So when you organize what we do now into political platforms and steps, you get something that's already being done on the planet that makes sense, and it can be discussed. Since 2008, the window of acceptable discourse, what people can talk about in America without being immediately disregarded as a science fiction writer from Mars, has shifted markedly to the left, and we even have a socialist running for president and polling very well. So all these together, in a social democracy, you would then be going on to something else that you could only call at this point post-capitalism. The market will always exist because we need to trade, but it could be so sharply regulated that it could exist in what economists call the margin. The market on the margin for the toys, not for the necessities of life, which should all be public utilities and part of a living wage, but just for the extras. There, if people want to play that game, then it would be like, you know, playing rugby or tackle football or anything that's, you know, kind of testosterone-fueled, but exciting for those who like it. That's what capitalism should be in the post-capitalism world. It's also important to point out that it needs to be global. And never should we be fighting. First, you shouldn't be fighting government, because government is really the people's company. And secondly, you shouldn't be fighting globalization, because unless this whole system is global and enforced by the World Trade Organization and by international treaty, then bad actors can simply move their capital assets elsewhere. And although America is by far the largest agglomeration in capital on this planet still, far out reaching, for instance, China and the European Union. If things happen in the United States, it will lead the way, just the way that California tends to lead the United States. So it would be good if you do it at the national level, but you also want it on the global level to get rid of tax havens and flags of convenience so nobody can skip out on this system. In other words, A global system is good if the rules are good, and a global system is bad if the rules are bad. Right now, the rules are bad. They can be changed because they're laws and treaties, and laws and treaties can be changed. It's true that this fight of changing the laws is most powerful on the local and the national levels because that's where people have the most control of the laws, and it's really at the international level where the technocrats of Davos have taken over. But they, too, are responsive to people power, and so we can work on it at all three levels, but you should never demonize the global level because it needs to be a world system. So what I'm saying here, and I'm really going to wrap it up, is that this is a political fight. It's not going to go away in the entirety of this century. Everybody alive here is going to be involved in this fight for the entirety of their lives. So you have to pace yourself for the long haul. You have to have a lot of faith in the young people to come in and throw in mega hours into the battle so that the... It's like a wave attack where wave after wave has to go out there and sacrifice many hours of their life to stupid small meetings in order to make change. And yet, it's how change happens. The greatest American utopian science fiction story is this one, that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from this earth. Shall not makes it a future tense and an imperative. It's a science fiction story. It's a utopian story. What Lincoln was saying to us was an injunction and even a command. Democracy only exists when people go out and make it happen, especially when there are very powerful forces with a lot of money trying to buy up that very same government that we call democratic. So in this battle, we have to settle in for the long haul and think of it as things that can be done in the day-to-day as political platforms and daily activity that also sees the long-term horizon of a planet where we actually are in balance with the natural forces and can make it work. And since it is possible, then we need to do it. It's sort of a matter of responsibility to the children and the people not yet born. So it's great to see a crowd. Here we are. We're in California. We're in Marin County. It's kind of the epicenter for a progressive vision like this. It's a utopian space itself and has been all along. So a great pleasure to speak to you all, and I look forward to the rest of the afternoon talking to everybody. Thank you.
Yay. So that was Kim Stanley Gardner, Kim Stanley Robinson, there we go, with just the kind of conversation we want to be having amongst us all, you know, that, let's see here, there we go, I think it's okay, it's a little bit cutting in and out, oh, board up, does it sound all right to you? Oh, Mercury, you are out of your shadow now, may it be so. So we are gathered here on the Visionary Activist Show, I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey, that's good, and we'll be taking a short musical break in a moment. But first, just to lay out some things that Kim Stanley Robinson put before us that is so useful. Language, rule of law, justice, as the software technology most intimate for our cahooting, our organic relationship to the physical world. And we go, right. So we are our radio council because there's so much available now for us to see and invoke and converse and do. And I'm going back to my original kind of profferings from decades ago, which is believe nothing, entertain possibilities, right? Because even if we happen to believe in the truth, it would still be a booby prize. It's all experimental, entertaining possibilities. And then when we really know something, so in honoring the birth of LSD on November 16th, there we go, right now, Mercury, as it's emerging from its shadow, is opposite Uranus. Uranus is sometimes called the higher octave of Mercury. It's in Taurus, which is the mind of nature, speaking to the mind of humans. It's available. It's available. And so many good things I've been doing with the smaller councils, and here we are, which is, you know, voting in nature, because our word inauguration comes from the augur. So we cast our secular votes, which we imbue with nature's sacredness, and then We also made our own ballots that we all went off to place, you know, in a special place that we love, to form a relationship. And again, the mind. Part of what the entheogenic sacraments open up is telepathic contact with big mind. There's the tree, there's the forest, there's the river. You know, and we will be taking our very short usual break right now, and then we will be right back. Here we go.
She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She shook the constellations and dazzled them across his eyes. She showered his head with quasars and made his tortoise cry.
Oh, get down.
Chanty, 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 come blow my chanty home. Chanty, chanty, come blow my chanty home. Telegraph my indigo sky ship, make its voyage long.
Now get down.
Welcome back, allies, to the Visionary Activist Show, and I'm your weaver of context, Caroline Casey. So we're convening in an experimental way. We just heard, many of us who were here in the last 30 minutes, we heard Kim Stanley Robinson's Bioneers 2015 short address, but very pithy, and we put this before all of our council to discuss. Remember, you know, in America, and may she wake up, and we speaking to group mind is available now and even today, right? Remember that, you know, in the 30s, you know, in the great time of Emma Goldman, and, you know, people would gather, working class would gather in small cities, you know, Richmond, Oakland, Providence, Rhode Island, Baltimore, you know, to discuss, you know, what is the purpose of government? How shall we define it? You know, and you know, intelligent discourse, most welcome. But just to put, to add to that, you know, our participatory astro-mythology. So why have I been so looking forward to the augury of today when Mercury emerges from shadow? So when I began working on the election charts and all, going, oh, well, okay, November 19th looked like the time when the election would begin to be settled. And I just invite us all to see, you know, coming on in, you know, Gettysburg Address, you know, the better part of Abe Lincoln, the better part of our angels, the better nature of our angels coming on in, you know, and regardless of opinions about the candidates, compost that, right, to see, you know, the ancestral dedication to democracy, to the democratic experiment, descending as a mantle of authority and power, you know, irrefutably going, there we have it, here we go. Because we know with Trump that he's just mad that, I mean, dementors are always and only self-referential. Right. So all that he's complaining about, like, oh, vote fixing is just, you know, why didn't his vote fix work? It's like, no, there was an unexpectedly authentic election, and authenticity is a great word. There we go. So let's go to Saturn. This language about what it is to be fully human and fully participatory in the world with our flora fauna. So Saturn, you know, right now is on the U.S. Pluto, right? Where, again, you don't have to believe a thing here. But when this country was founded, Pluto was at 27 Capricorn. We're headed for the Pluto return, the full kind of calamitous collapse, right? And the necessary ingenuity to weave back together the social fabric of support. And so language, of course, too. It's like, I think we should throw into Pluto's cauldron the term lockdown. No, that doesn't, nobody wants that. And ladle out, you know, paid creative introspection. There we go. You know, we're entering a period of paid creative introspection, right? Because unless people are supported and paid, it's the sine qua non. Otherwise, it really is this, you know, it could be, it wants to be, may we see it, see impossible things, right? And then our conversation, our introspection, what is it to be a good citizen? So accountability, Saturn's on the U.S. Pluto going, there we go. And Abe Lincoln was all, his chart all connected to that too. But we go, oh, yoo-hoo, oh, Emily Murphy, oh, yoo-hoo, you know, it would be great now. There we go, we see you. I love Doris Lessing's novels so much, not A Barrel of Fun, but deeply serious. But she posits in Shikasta, her name for our planet Earth, that people come with things to do, I mean, good things to do, a mission. It's really a Pluto thing. But expediency often raises its head. Expediency into the cauldron, right? And so as humans are kind of pondering whether to go for idealism or expediency, the spirits are, the ancestors are gathered around them, you know, almost heard, not seen, going, no, remember what you came to do. Remember what you came to do, right? And we want to join with that. We do want to join with that, going, no, you know, and to all of us, you know, whatever we came to do, now would be really good. Now would be really good. Even if we don't know what that is, you know, the power of wonder. I wonder what I, you know, that each of us, you know, cultivate, animate, and contribute our considerable gifts to the community at this time of, you know, farcical real danger, that we gaze at fully informed. And yes, there's lots of work to be done. Incredible researchers on Twitter have gone through every proposed member of Biden's cabinet, you know, in detail, going, okay, we've got some work to do, step by step. First, the mantle of power. First, democracy. First, you know, many good things as well. You know, we are alert. It's like, Well, well, yes. I'll pick up that thought somewhere along the way too. But when we talk about accountability, yeah, Emily Murphy, but also people have say been pondering, you know, should Trump be pardoned? And we go, not without truth and reconciliation, not without a full accountability of the full horror, the betrayal of the Kurds. Not, you know, the kidnapping and torment of children, the irreparable harm done, and on and on and on, all of it out there. Only then may we, the citizens, consider, you know, a pardon, maybe. But only after truth and reconciliation, only after all of it. And Doris Lessing, also in Shikasta, she has a pretty dramatic thing in which the white race is put on global trial, right? Not as punishment, but as truth and reconciliation. And we go, yes, that's a good ritual as well. There we go. So Saturn, there's all of us. I've come to really love the exquisite language of astrology as a language of our, each one of us, our interior psyche, and its separation by a thin membrane we call identity from the whole vast, huge conversation that we're all a part of. You know, so as we, Saturn authority, inhale our authority from inquisitions, from cringing, you know, even from, you know, cringing in front of the, you know, snark of progressives going, no, we are uncringing, unfurling, we cringe before no one. I'm getting an echo. I wonder why. Okay, now we're back. Okay, and I have to check with the cat has not been messing with the board. We go, okay. So even right now, you know, what can we do together? Inhaling our authority, one image for it is it's our goat, right? Our goat might get gotten, but then it comes back even friskier and less obedient than before it got got. Here's our little goaty selves, our authority, which contains the word author. So either, as good citizens, we inhale our authority, or the world is authoritarian, you know, and our authority is dedicated to collective well-being and mutual aid. And I think it's interesting that Bernie was on television last night saying, absolutely, he wants to be Secretary of Labor. I go, that would be great. Let's see that. You know, and then see the voices are like, and we go, no, we compost that. We are fully informed. We gaze at danger because freedom lies from there. And in detective novels, you know, where authenticity is the greatest protection in the underworld. And as the 231 BC detective novels from China said, if one is authentic, meaning we aspire that our inner and outer selves match, then here's what will happen. Bad people will come up to you in the underworld and say, I was going to rob you and kill you, but I can sense that you're authentic, so I want to switch teams, but I have underworld skills you will need, right? So I like that in talking to many whistleblowers, right, who were like, well, we did terrible things for 40 years at the NSA, but now we want to be good. But in the spirit of detective novels and the spicy, dark humor and cheating of death that is such a good part of that, the characters say, yes, we welcome this quirky alliance here just to get us past the most crude and farcical aspects of despotism. But we will keep a savvy eye because all of our story might not be completely in accord with all of your story. But for the moment, right, alliances. We go, oh, there we go. So Bernie is, that's a good thing. I think it's, we want to honor also our journey now, as I delineated before the Kim Stanley Robinson's talk, you know, going, you know, Mercury emerges now again, just to see, does it feel like we can really call in sensibility, that we can see things moving? That's our next move, our next step. And to throw a little line of the desirable, I mean, part of our attention to be able to travel through time, it's part of science fiction, and we don't even need to go very far, you know, so here we are, and then, you know, and then we're putting a little lasso to a little attention of creative cahooting to January 5th in Georgia. And again, very organized Stacey Abrams and the whole movement of stand-up and black women leading, organizing youth and churches. And Stacey Abrams, bless her heart, you know, says this is also about educating right, in regard to the Senate. You know, and she says Ossoff and Warnock are men of character. And we go, right. And we go, that's a wonderful thing. So part of our dynamic as we're journeying before we get to January 5th, it's all part of that. I like us imagining, somebody had said, well, it's going to take a month to clean out the COVID infestation at the White House. And we go, yes, a month before January. That would be the winter solstice. That would be really good. And again, I encourage us just, you know, entertaining this possibility and animating this possibility and opening portals between worlds, because that's quite available right now. Mercury in the sky quintiles Pluto and Jupiter, quintiles irresistible eloquence on behalf of all of us spiraling forth, you know, what is really important, mutual aid and kindness and ingenuity and a wonderful life for the children of all species. And Sylvia Hanley had said, and I keep this forever, the quintile is that, but it's also the capacity to open portals between worlds. So it's a beautiful augury that this is Mercury emerging, highly resonant with the Gettysburg Address, you know, and all that's been good as well, and Abraham Lincoln, everybody befoibled, but we again speak to the good part, you know, to come on in, you know, and open up these portals of possibility. So I think it's a wonderful vision for us to animate that the worst aspects of creepitudinous thuggery are swept out of the White House, never to return, you know, on the winter solstice, which is a miracle time. I mean, it is a miracle time. It's the birth of the trickster redeemer within all of us. That's the crucial dynamic within all of us. Not just one human, you know, it's again, we're electing a story because on this winter solstice, Saturn and Jupiter conjoin. We can see them now sinking in the west, you know, lower and lower after sunset. The moon is right next to them tonight. It's fantastic, and I want to come back to the moon. You know, and So on the winter solstice, Saturn and Jupiter, responsibility and opportunity are wedded, and they come together every 20 years to set the desirable template. Well, we want to make it desirable to set the template of the next 20 years. So when that happens on the winter solstice, which is intriguing, it will occur at 0 degrees of Aquarius, which is we're electing a story, we're electing a citizenry, we're electing a guiding path. And what is beautiful today is that as Mercury emerges now, all the councils that are of dedicated people, past, present, and future, are convening. And the moon now is at 0 Aquarius. And you can see this great lineup at night, if it's not smoky or cloudy, Jupiter, Saturn, Moon, really great. And then wait for it, a little less than 90 degrees of arc, then Mars rising very red. You know, Mars has been on its vision quest retrograde to release the unimaginative prison that Mars has been put in of thuggery and war, you know, into the protector. Again, this, you know, So the moon's at 0 Aquarius now, and it's holding a place for a little pathway to the winter solstice, the birth of King Arthur. It's also, you know, all of the birth of the Redeemer. And we do want to mention, you know, Hijon the Conqueror from the south, these folk heroes who were interested in liberating the people, liberating the land, liberating the entire circumstance. You know, as Dionne Fortune said in her esoteric work to protect Britain with all the ritualists of Britain from the Nazi invasion, she said, and I hold on to this through this whole time period, she said, people are always asking, this was like the early 1940s, when will the war end? And she goes, can't tell you when. We'll tell you how. It will end when the conditions that gave rise to it are resolved, right? And that's pitching right to us, too, going, you know, this tyranny will end when the causes that gave rise to it are addressed and composted. And really, that's why our dedication is that the despotism and tyranny and cruelty so embodied by this current regime, you know, parts of it everywhere, but so cartoonishly and thuggishly and horrifically embodied, you know, be fully the template itself, be composted in Pluto's cauldron, going, no. And that's why I mentioned, you know, Jonestown and all of that, you know, and we go, right, we know that's not a Trump thing. He doesn't want to kill himself, but he wouldn't mind killing his followers. That's evident. So, yes, the template of despotism composted, it's a good thing to see and a good thing to be willing. And that means within us all as well, ally etiquette. You know, Uranus, trickster, ingenuity is associated with democracy, equality, synchronicity. And it was some ways back that I wondered, what do those things have to do with each other? Thank you, backstage board up. Okay, that's all right. What do those things have to do with each other? And no sooner did I wonder that, wondering is really good at inviting in synchronicity, that events stage themselves to be very clear that when we look down at somebody or up at somebody, there's no synchronicity. When we treat each other as allies, and it doesn't mean being nice. Nice comes from the word nescient, you know. It means, with respect. And remember, the word respect means to look again. And the words of Aretha, respect. Keep looking until one finds something to respect and work with in some way. So we honor that dynamic. So electing community. On Facebook, there's a kind of QAnon stalker who just seems magnetized to comment, sometimes horrifically, on things that I post, and sometimes I just said, but I posted, a wonderful animal video, and she goes, me and my QAnon conservative friends, we love animals too. And I go, well, might we have a shared vision that we want a world that is safe and honoring of the children of all species? And she said, absolutely. I'm like, All right, that's good. I'm going to tiptoe away now. That's good. Let's put that on the altar of desirable mystery. There's some kind of accord, because so back to ally etiquette. It's part of that. It's part of that. We strengthen whatever we resist. How do we become skillful at, you know, spiraling linguistic Aikido, you know, coming to the desired vision? We're all tested. It's, you know, it is a cuckoo but worthy time. It's all relevant. Let's put it that way. So the ally etiquette says, you know, if we treat each other well, and we all have different roles, you know, on stage and backstage, but if we are straight across, like, hi, how you doing? You know, if we are aspiring to embody democracy, then the rate of synchronicity increases dramatically. I have seen this. I have seen this. I feel that I know this to be true, but don't believe anything, right? Just test it out. You know, and again, that equal kind of dynamic as ally etiquette that affirms that we are the molecules with which the big story speaks to itself through the agency of synchronicity. You know, and this time right now, you know, the Mercury's whole journey and its emergence is the Renaissance Council, not by snootiness or privilege, but by affinity. Who brought what? You know, and how shall we cooperate with the mind of nature? How shall we honor biomimicry as the sine qua non of our Renaissance? And all that, you know, Kim Stanley Robinson really mentioned, you know, utopia. And, you know, I can feel, you know, our fellow teammates every now and then, you know, cringing, because he says, you know, we humans are great thinkers. And I can people going, oh, no, not thinking. And, you know, oh, the heart. You know, it's like, no, thinking and the heart. They love each other. It's a democracy. We like all of our capacities, right? And language, one of the great, you know, intimate technologies of cahooting. Whatever we have a word for, we have a relationship, right? There we go. And it's not to be tiptoey and like, oh, I said a bad word, you know. It's our predominant thing. And I just encourage self and others that when we say something that is undesirable, like, oh, the American people are so stupid, just for the fun of it, we go, the American people have been stupid. There we go. And that's why I always take my leftover coffee and throw it out the door going, get smarter, America. There we go. I mean, every little thing, you know, is a moment of playful dedication. That's part of our dynamic. So, and I loved, you know, Kim Stanley Robinson saying, you know, we can do this ingeniously. We could structure, you know, support for all beings. Again, so crucial in this collapse more that we're headed to, but ingenuity, and that's why dedicating our principles are so crucial now, that no one be evicted from their apartment with nowhere to go and no support system and just horrific cruelty, the horrific cruelty. And it's fractal mirrored, right? It's like Jared has a real estate company that's suing so it can evict all its tenants now. It's like, no, you dementors are missing the whole point of life, which is, you know, dogs and creatures and cavorting and kindness, and the purpose of humans is to give pleasure to animals. Tickle the dog under its chin. There we go. There we go. You know, what can we do? So, you know, all of those dynamics and some playful whimsy, you know, certainly we want to define and dedicate what is it to be a good citizen. So as Saturn and Jupiter are coming to conjoin on the winter solstice, you know, and welcoming back, you know, King Arthur, there we go, and High John the Conqueror of the South, whose famous saying is, we got to find a way out of no way and hit a straight lick with a crooked stick. And, you know, again, we work with the good and we are aware of the bad, you know, but when Obama gave his first really grown-up speech about race to the American people, just like everybody was a grown-up, ally etiquette, you know, he did quote High John. He said, we got to find a way out of no way. And he didn't say the second half of the sentence and hit a straight lick with a crooked stick, but that's what he did. That's what he did in that speech. And we go, right, all of this. So what is it to be a good citizen? You know, and the whole language of astrology, again, not a belief system, not a superstition, not a thing, you know. It's one of the great symbolic languages that humans have embedded guiding wisdom and guiding collaborative wisdom of how shall we, you know, cahoot with nature. So Aquarius is community. in one sense, right? And it's called, you know, ruled by Saturn and Uranus. But really what it means is incarnation of Saturn and Uranus. You know, dedication and discipline and wildness. Discipline and wildness and structure, stability, and innovation. Always in this dynamic dance. But it says, well, to be a good citizen means to embody both, right? To have Saturn constraints, as a ritual, really. I will wear a mask as a Saturn constraint in order that the community have greater freedom. There you go. And I do always go back to when I picked up my dog's puppies and they hadn't never had a leash on, and they were like, whoa, what is this leash thing? And I go, no, a story. It's a constraint that's going to lead to greater freedom. You know, we're going to go out and do a big world and have a fantastic life. And they're like, oh, we're good with that. A constraint that leads to greater freedom. That's part of our dynamic, may it be so. And I want to also invoke our whimsy, looking at the pictures of the alleged Proud Boys in Washington, D.C., going, oh, they really need a makeover by Queer Eye for the Proud Boy guy, going, no, those T-shirts, the color is so drab, just tick that. Anyway, so whimsy is important, you know, and against all odds, it is highly plausible right now. May truth-revealing trickster boomerang all nefarious creepitude. There we go. All right. That many of the recounts are coming up with, you know, higher vote counts for Biden and Harris. And we go, yes, me, everything boomerang, and boomerang sort of spelled like a meringue pie. Not harm, but everything boomerang with a pie in the face. That would be good. So all of these, you know, animations are useful and are dynamic. So we're all the kind of choreography of the birth of LSD and the thing all around now, and so people don't need to take substance, microdose, but the entheogenic journey, I think, is useful for us all now, because when it, you know, a big dose will come on and we go, oh my goodness, and then let go of control so power can come on in. That's the dynamic. And it's always been a kind of etiquette that, you know, forces backstage would love to be invited to come in, but they can't unless we do. So I think it's useful for us to say out loud that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. It's really useful to go out into the woods and say, you know, that government of flora fauna, by flora fauna, and for flora fauna shall not perish from the earth. Are we together, trees and river and Potomac River, you know, close to my house, you know, swooshing out corruption out of the city. There you go. All of nature is eager to cahoot with us in this experimental fashion. So there we have it for now, team. Whatever we came to do now would be good. We are willing. And from the re-wedding of activism and animism arises citizen trickster within all of our hearts. There we go. That's what's being born in all of us this winter solstice. So thank you, team, and thanks so much to Jose Gonzalez, a wonderful board up, and we will reconvene next week, Thanksgiving. There we go. Woof.